Welcome to the Talk Doesn't Cook Rice podcast with myself, John Staskowski, and Danny Massaro, where we explore thought-provoking concepts and provide practical insights to enrich modern life. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Right, Danny, we are back with Mr. Byung-Chul Han, who we talked about in the last episode when we looked at the Burnout Society. And I think we referred to some of this stuff in that episode, actually, about rituals. So we're going to be talking about a different book of his called The Disappearance of Rituals. It follows on from that stuff. It's relevant to what we talked about last time, but we just thought there was enough in this to justify its own episode. There's some really useful, quite thought-provoking insights into just how we're living, especially in modern day, and what that might mean as a community. And as a group. So yeah, that's what we're going to get into. Really, the book, as Han tends to do, it's a really short, punchy book. So it's one of those that I would definitely try and hunt it out and read it if people are interested in it, because it's dead easy. It's not one of those big philosophical tomes that's going to take you months to read. You can bang it out in an afternoon. But he's basically trying to explore the role that rituals play in society. And essentially the point he's making is like, look, we're losing our rituals as things basically being gradually eroded over time, and it's a big feature of modern life that we're really losing touch with that ritual nature of life. He thinks they're basically essential, especially when it comes to maintaining community and things like that. So they're a big thing in just guiding behavior, identity, and yeah, they're just vanishing. And he's like, he refers to it as this atomized society, which is a feature of the modern day culture. And a big part of that, I think, is because we're lacking in rituals. So it's fair to say he's not being overly nostalgic. He's not saying, right, let's all get back to, if people have listened to that Spiral Dynamics episode we did, he's not saying let's all go back to that purple stage of like living in tribes and having a really, really ritualized, quite mystical, magical existence. He's not saying let's go back to that. He's just trying to show that the current state of things and a lot of the modern pathologies that we've got, not least the erosion of community, is to do with this disappearance of rituals. It hasn't been a good thing that we're much more freer and we're less tethered by particular ways of doing things and all getting together and having these really quite patterned ways of living. He's like, yeah, society is much freer, but I don't think that's a good thing. In fact, he thinks it's led to what he called like a collective narcissism, which we'll get into as we go through. Just to give rituals a bit of a definition, he says, we can define rituals as symbolic techniques of making oneself at home in the world. They turn the world into a reliable place. They are to time what a home is to space. They render time habitable. So Han is a bit of a student of Heidegger in many ways. So he's into this notion of time and what that means for the lived experience of human beings. So he thinks rituals are a key part of that, which we'll get into. So Danny, over to you. What's going on with you for rituals? Why is this a good episode to do?
It links on a little bit from last episode, was the burnout, wasn't it? The burnout society. Everything's fast paced and forwards and production and move on, move on. You know, social media, show the world what you are, be the master and slave to yourself, push on. He sort of says that that's fine. Obviously, it's the water we're swimming in, and that's the way capitalism and neoliberalism is, and we all got to push on and stay on the pace. And I can understand that, and he understands it. He says, but there's pitfalls to it. And it's not like that he ever offers solutions, but I think what he's doing in this book, when he says that rituals are something that can slow time down and sort of stop you in your tracks with all that, what I took, I really enjoyed it, because he basically says that rituals aren't really about you. They're about the ritual, not you. So you might end up with a net gain, you know, of feeling peaceful and whatever, and connected and community. But when you have to sit at the dinner table, because, you know, you just have to sit there because you eat at 5:30 every night-ish, you know, and all the family sit and you do a prayer, or you don't, or you just sit down and you don't have any computers there and you so on, and you have your, you know, your starter, then your main meal, and then you might have some sweet after. You don't do it in any order and just let anyone bring their phone, and you have to, like, no, this is what we do at the dinner table. That really is one time in the day, every day, that looks like it's the same thing, but it's not. There's always difference in it. But what it does, it it makes you feel at home. It stops the chaos and the speed of the world, and it settles you into, right, for that half an hour or an hour or whatever it is, I have to just sit there, and it's about us all, and it's about the ritual of having dinner together at the dinner table, and that's it. And whatever happens in that hour or whatever, it's, you know, I have to give myself to that. It's not about me, really, even though it's bloody good for me in a way, and I've been taught it. It's the same with going to maybe church for people. It's the same as perhaps, you know, what you do at Christmas and what you do with your friends when you go for a drink or when you go for a coffee, and, you know, you make a cup of tea and you do it in a certain way, or you tidy your room and, you know, there's a certain way you do it, and you always give that time to it. Rituals could be something like your dog walk every day. That's one time I go out, no matter what, that I follow these procedures of mine or that have been laid down that I've always done. And they're not about, it's not a habit, because it's not about production. It's not like a good habit, you know, like, because it benefits me. It's more just about almost that takes over for now. I'm not the master or, you know, telling myself to do it. I just enter into it, and it, like, has an effect on me because I just do it. And obviously in sports, people have a lot of what you might, you know, rituals in sports and things. And say you're under pressure or stress at tournaments or at matches and so on. I think when you go into a warm-up ritual that you do all the time, or you go into you go for a walk, a pre-match walk or a meal, I think these things psychologically really help you, because I just do this. It's automatic. I have to pay attention whilst doing it. I worship the ritual. I give it its due time, but it, in a weird way, it's not about me winning this match. It's about doing the ritual. And it breaks the brain from this sort of narcissism and what Han says, over-psychologizing oneself, that every little thing is all your brain's going all the time, because it's in the end, it's always about me. How's my mood, my emotions, my mental well-being, my outlook, my future, my past. The ritual breaks that, and that's why it makes you feel at home in the world and not necessarily lost in chaos or lost at sea. So I think there's a lot in it. And it is really, in spiral dynamics terms, it is the purple part of the spiral. The orange people in the modern world now, we always, this technology, rational, hyper-rational, we're like, oh, we're way past all that. Rituals, if you don't want to eat at the table, don't worry, you know, why do you make a cup of tea like that? You could do it this quick in the microwave. What are you doing? And it's like, it's not the point. The point isn't about production and gain and moving it on. The point is to sacrifice myself for this moment. The ritual owns me, you know, and that's what I found fascinating about it. It de-psychologizes you a bit.
It's fair to say Han is basically, all of his books are basically just hammering orange, aren't they, in that spiral dynamic. Like, that is his thing, that he's going at with both barrels all the time. And he's, like I said, I don't think he's necessarily saying let's all go back to purple and start living in small tribes and hunting and gathering and all that type of stuff. He's just saying, look, this is what it's like, and it's pretty grim for a lot of people because of that. So time, like you just mentioned about, is important. And I really like this notion he has. So he talks about symbolic perception and how that has been replaced by serial perception. So this serial perception, he thinks, is a modern way of perceiving the world and what's going on around you, where everything's about, like, what's new, what's next, what's coming down the pipe. You're never really ever in that, just in the moment, because your attention's always looking for the next newest thing that's coming down the pipe. And that might be like information. It might be like, well, what's my next experience? What's my next sensation? It's always just like one thing after the next. And you're never really grounded. So I was likening it to you earlier, like people watching a box set these days. So like, right, let's get on Netflix. The latest thing's on. That sort of binge watching, right, let's bang out 12 episodes in a weekend. And it's just like, you kind of watch one, and before you've even finished it, you're almost onto the next one. And it's just like, you're just banging through your life in that way, really quite shallow attention. And Han, like we talked about it a little bit in the last episode, when he talks about a lot of the modern maladies of like ADHD and depression and the sort of the modern mental health crisis in lots of ways. But he says, ADHD, he thinks, results from this serial perception because the mind is never at rest. It's always like busy. It's lost. He talks about it's lost its capacity to linger and just be in time, in space, in that homely feeling and just linger and not have something to have your attention on constantly. And that for him is bad because it just means that we never really get this deep attention that emerges out of ritual. And especially, like, he refers to religious practices quite a bit. They're all really, he calls them exercises in attention. This, like you said, so the meal, like saying grace before a meal, that could be quite a ritualistic way of sitting down as a family and eating dinner. But he's just saying, look, that deepens your attention. It exercises your attention rather than just like, what's Danny doing now? What's on my phone? What's that? What's on the TV? Constantly like flying through, chasing new stimuli. And he's just like, basically, as a part of that, we've lost this capacity for repetition. So the capacity to just do the same things over and over again, maybe not in the exact same way, but in a ritual way of like, right, I'm going to make a coffee. That means I'm going to get my proper nice little cafetiere out and I'm going to get the good coffee and I'm going to boil the kettle, let that sit for 30 seconds. Then I'm going to let that simmer in there for 3 minutes. And like you said, a lot of people are just like, well, sod that, just go and get one from Starbucks. They'll make it for me and it's done. So trying to exercise your attention, he thinks that repetition as part of that stabilizes life. That's what makes you feel at home in the world. What happens if you're constantly onto the new thing all the time? It's just part of this neoliberal consumption, burnout society type vibe, isn't it? Of like, you never complete, you're always moving on to the next thing. You're always becoming something more. And yeah, he just thinks this ritual and slowing down time in a way, letting your perception settle and linger, that's a vital role that rituals play. And because life is less ritualized now, we've lost that capacity. And he just thinks a lot of mental malady are linked to that. He actually says, I think, in a society governed by ritual, there is no depression. And that's a pretty bold claim, that, isn't it? But when you start to think about it, yeah, it's like flipping it. Like, where a lot of those really old school ritual communities and ways of life, were people knocking around going, yeah, I'm depressed, I've got this, I've got that? That's what he's getting at anyway. He's just like, yeah, again, not saying we need to go back to that, but this is what's happening and this is why he thinks that is.
I think what I was saying about, now we don't, you know, biologically diseases and mental illnesses, probably, you know, they've always, there might be lingering things in the brain. I'm sure it's different for a lot of people, but I can't see that it's helping that this extensive serial perception, like the computer game that never ends, the computer game that has levels for eternity that you keep having to play and go on, there's no end to it. Yeah. Even, a game of chess, you know, is the same thing over and over and over, just 16 sets or pieces each or whatever. And then you play it and then, you know, it's infinite in a way, but it's the same. So, and it takes patience and thought and it's now, and it's about racking up a game of snooker over and over and over. It's not like you're going on to all constantly different games. So I think when you're not into this scattered, quick, moving it on in a rush type thing. And what I've seen one of the differences I see with really kind of good players and practicers, the people that, like in squash, we have it where you do solo practice. So you go on and do your solo hitting a ball by yourself, and they tend to not need music on there. They tend to not need anyone telling them what to do. It's like they can go on and learn it by heart, repetition. And it's like intensive perception. It's slow, it's focused, it has duration, and they dwell. So they might just be hitting backhands for like 20 minutes, but they're lost in that time. There's detail and things going on. And then the day after, they might do exactly the same thing, but they're like in a different kind of working on a slightly different detail, and they're not thinking, oh my god, I did this yesterday, it's boring, because the brain is learning patience, it's learning discipline, it's learning to focus. It almost becomes pleasurable in that. It almost becomes like, well, my practice is my ritual. It's the thing that I can't explain it. I think just because you can't explain something, why something's powerful, it doesn't mean it's meaningless. And I don't think I have to go, well, I know why your solo practice is very powerful to you. It's because it's a ritual. That's just me explaining it. When you actually do your own thing that you do and you repeat, you know, by rote, by heart, and it's just the same thing repeated, which has gone out of fashion. You know, it's like, move on, get creative. Even in sports coaching, you know, it's not like the karate kid, is it? Where, you know, wax on, wax off, just repeat, repeat, repeat. And like, oh, no, no, that's too simplistic. We need to be more creative now and complicate it and talk about options. And you've got to adapt practices for the modern brain. Well, Hans say, no, you've got to adapt your brain for old practices. You know, you've got to learn how to not be in such a rush and to be so scattered. And how do you ever expect to focus and hold your attention if you don't practice that and you're so busy? So I think he explains it as it's going to be very, very hard to do that in modern times, because what drives consumption of more and more and more and more is the brain is more peaceful because it's busy in a way. It's like, if I can keep it busy, I don't have to stop and dwell. So you don't feel the pain of dwelling and being bored and stopping and oh my God, it's not about me. You get addicted to the narcissism of everything, you know, is more, 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 more. I need this experience, you know, that. And I find that really, really fascinating with what he's saying in terms of like the modern person isn't really given any example anywhere that being slow is good. It's always about move on, be better, don't just be where you are at, move it on, have more, be more. And he says he thinks that's partly because he brings death into it, actually. He sort of says, I think that the sort of sell of capitalism in a way is the more you get, the more you earn, the more experiences you have, the more, you'll live forever. You won't die. But he's like, you are going to die. There's nothing that you can achieve or gain or have that will stop that. So remember that. Stop accumulating stuff and like be here and be now more, you know. So there is an Eastern side to this, you know, more of a be in the moment. But he thinks it's linked to, you know, you have to lose your fear of death or retirement or whatever and what's to come. And you lose that by dwelling into rituals more, because it's them that make you feel at home. The answer isn't keep consuming. The answer is actually slowing down and making it not about you. And that seems counterintuitive in the modern world. And he's saying you have to try and find your ways to have your own rituals and do what you do to make you feel safe, even knowing that one day you're not going to be here.
But also as well, as part of that, like you said earlier, it not being about you as much. So this is, he hammers narcissism, and he really does see the modern day as just this really narcissistic age of... basically, everyone's just obsessed with themselves. So I like the term he uses. He calls it homo psychologicus. It's like this like new breed of a new evolved type of human, I suppose. And he's quite, I just laugh at this section. I really love, because he's just brutal in some of the quotes. But we've talked about authenticity quite a bit in different episodes, especially when we've talked about the existentialist philosophers and all that stuff. And that's a huge part of existentialism. It's like, yeah, be yourself, like not just being a conformist drone and going along with everything. Hans almost raging against that as well. Yeah. So he says the society of authenticity is a performance society. All members perform themselves, all produce themselves. Everyone pays homage to the cult of the self, the worship of the self, in which everyone is his or her own priest. Pretty brutal, that, isn't it? And it's just like, yeah, you're all just obsessed with yourself. And he's like, authenticity in a way is the enemy of community. And basically, narcissism as part of that authenticity undermines community. So he's big on like rituals bring people together. So like you've used a good example of the dinner table. That brings a family together, doesn't it? At a set time and place. And it grounds you in that moment. And we're all in it and we're all doing it. Whereas when everyone's just off trying to be authentic, that's your nightmare, to be like everyone else. You try to be different all the time. Like, I don't want to conform. I want to be my own captain of my own ship. So who are you to tell me what time I'm eating? Oh, and by the way, I'm not eating what you're eating, because I'm vegan and I'm this and I'm that. And it's all in the mix, isn't it? So this, he really does see authenticity as a negative for just human flourishing, I suppose. And he talks about tattoos. So like, with the rise of the cult of authenticity, tattoos have also become fashionable again. Within a ritual context, these symbolize the alliance between individual and community. So back in the day, and he uses example of in the 19th century, tattoos were really popular, but it was like a way to sort of, the surface of your skin or your body was like a way where you could put your yearnings and dreams and like project them onto your physical body, I suppose. Whereas he's like, now tattoos just lack any symbolic power whatsoever. All they're trying to do is help you prove how unique you are, because you've got a different tattoo. You're like, your tattoos are different to everyone else's. So it's like, it says the body is neither a ritual stage nor a surface of projection. Rather, it is an advertising space. The neoliberal hell of the same is populated with tattooed clones. And it's just like, so it'll probably trigger it. Anyone who's listening to this with a tattoo is now looking at it like, oh shit, what have I done? But he does, he sees it as like, yeah, it's being authentic. That goes hand in hand with distrusting ritualized forms of interaction, because ritual does, it means you're the same. You're all in it together. We're doing it together as one, and I'm part of something that's bigger than me. Whereas the authenticity, narcissism cult, as he calls it, it's like, no, I don't want to be like any of you lot. I'm my own. Like, look at me. I'm unique. I'm my own project. And I'm the boss of that project, I suppose, or the priest of that project. And that's what he calls this homo psychologicus, captivated by itself, caught in an intricate inwardness.
Yeah. So that basically is, people are the same by thinking that they're individuals.
That's it.
You know, the strive for authenticity. In fact, when you look around, like look around my gym nowadays, you know, or look around the things, a lot of the young people. Yeah, there's fashion and there's things. You always will follow fashions, but they're all striving to be authentic individuals and have their own, you know, and show their own story seller thing. And I'm this and I'm individual, but actually they're all the same by being not, they're not part of a group. Group that were the ancient people, the old people say that, you know, this is what you do. Like if you join a gym, like a martial arts gym, you have to take your shoes off. You're all the same. You all wear a white kit. You all wear a belt. You bow to the master. You basically, it's like that's a ritual that we all do before we get on the mat. And it's part of safety. It's part of tradition. It's a ritual.
And this sport or the activity is bigger than any one person, isn't it? It's a bigger thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And that, I think ritual's got a bad reputation. A lot of people think superstitions, or they think obviously things like rituals drive clones in terms of like the Nazis, or the, you know, that you can end up all just being like communistic pawns in a grand scheme, like you're all can't think for yourself. He's definitely not saying that. I mean, that's not what rituals are. Rituals are more symbolic group things. And I like what he said about the big thing in the book, again, isn't it, is we've ended up with communication without community. We've got communication and information everywhere without feeling. Everything is lots of information has to be like, and what does that do for me? It's not communication where you're just feeling each other and you're just in each other's space doing idle chit chat and pointless talk and gossip and just like, oh, how's the weather and talk. Like, no, we haven't got time for that. What's that achieving, that talk? You know, so he's sort of saying even things like talking to your neighbors, keeping in touch with your local community, face-to-face conversations, having meetings, that's community where you do some communication. But you think of something now like Twitter or social media a lot, even WhatsApp and emails, it's data going out, you know, information, and there's no back and forth often. It's just there's a tweet, bang. It's communication, but there's no community in there. So there's like, there's nothing coming back and no give and take and no debate and no learning how to sort of hold a conversation and be patient in it and listen and then listen back and then argue and then go, actually, I've changed my mind. You're right. And have a little bit of that sort of time to do it. It's like, I haven't got time for that. I need to get to a conclusion. Quick and move on to the next thing. So sitting down, having cups of tea, having a beer, having a natter and a chat and having time for people, is that's going away as well. Everybody's on the march. And it was interesting, I thought this when I first worked in a college in 1997 or so. I always remember our sports department, we did a lot of rituals. We always went out on a Friday after playing team sport together. We always went in the gym or on the pitch and played footy or whatever, with volleyball or something. And we always went for a couple of beers and some stayed out, some went home. We always had someone was always in charge for the week doing the cakes or the brews, or was bringing in the treats on a Wednesday, or the, you know, there was always, Christmas was massive. You know, everyone went to the do no matter what. Summer leaving do as well. We always might have gone camping for it as a team or as a night. And like everybody just did it. You might not have even fancied going, but you went because of the, you know, the job and it was good. And it was like, I remember feeling very like we had a proper team spirit in that staff room, and we were sports and we were different different from the engineers, and we were different from the librarians, and we were different from the scientists, and we were different from the English staff room, you know, just a few rooms down. We were obviously sport with all our quirky ritualistic sportiness. And when I think back, I was thinking the other day after reading it, I was on holiday thinking about this, and I thought, yeah, when email started to come in and monitoring and, you know, the internet a bit more and everything, and everything like morphed into one. It's not important anymore to go out on a Friday or do that. It's what's, you know, I've sent in, you know, CC'ing on email. You started to get communication without community. Everything was started to get sent from up on top down, and then there were memos, and you didn't have to do face to face, and you could send an email and CC people in, like 20 people in it. It's like, I've done my job, I've communicated, but you actually hadn't seen that person. And there must have been a time then where finally I'd been communicating, or someone had been communicating with people I'd never seen face to face. And then when you did see them in the flesh, you were like, oh, it's you. I've put a name to the face to the name now on the email. I just feel like personally, that was my experience. Of it was like, no, rituals aren't productive. They're a bit off the cuff. They're not measurable. You know, all that's, if it's not measured, it doesn't get done. All that, it's not valuable. And I think with coaching as well, I think what I noticed with a lot of coaching, a lot of the feeling goes from it. It goes more to a logical, rational exercise. I think academia come in and there's benefits to that. But I think coaching's a feeling as much as it's an information exchange. And I feel like, credit wasn't given to like talking before the session, you know, having a laugh, bringing some gifts, banter, things around it. It was like, no, let's just get to the session. I've got to get going. I haven't got time for a talk afterwards or before it. I remember DP, who coached Laura to being world champion, and Nick and many more. And I remember when he got sacked by England Squash for basically not doing paperwork, and he wouldn't change. And he said, I can't write me down on paper. And it came to a head, and essentially, oh, you're not in modern enough. I think that he said it was a family breakup. He said it always reminded him of a family breaking up. He said, and they never understood what I mean by that. And he was quite bereft, DP, when he was sacked. It took him a long time to get over it in his heart. And he wasn't a perfect coach, and he didn't know everything, and he wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, you know, he was a saint or anything, but it changed. And I think that reminded me an example of the rituals and the practices and the traditions of what always went on were replaced by science, rationality, moving it on, production. How are we going to gain more from this? And actually, I think it's backfired. I think when you take that inner relationship, Ken Wilber's lower left stuff, you know, that bond, you take a lot of these things that rituals give you, this slowing of time, perspective, duration, patience, stop being so narcissistic. It's not always about you. I do see elements of it with Jurgen Klopp and Guardiola that separate them. I think their players, they run and they run and they run and they run and they run, and they just keep going beyond their fitness levels. And it's almost like what Han says as well. It's like the warriors. You get the warriors, not soldiers. Soldiers mean that people do it because they're paid to do it. Soldiers will go to war because they're paid and they'll die for payment. Whereas warriors do it because they can, and they know they'll die because there's no better way to do it. Just give everything you've got for no reward anyway, which is a very purple tribalistic attitude, isn't it? Sacrifice yourself for gods. And I do believe that there's something in that. I believe that when you become transactional and everything you do is for pay and influence and status and all these things we've talked about, I think ultimately it's for you. You're narcissistic on it, which isn't all bad. It drives energy. There's nothing wrong with soldiers. But when you come up against the warrior, you know, like in 300, you know, versus paid soldiers, warriors, generally the narrative goes, proper warriors, 50 of them will beat 500 soldiers.
What's the quote from about the Spartans? It's like the Spartans don't ask how many is the enemy. They ask where are they, sort of thing. And it's like,
yes,
they're not, but it's just like, right, we're having it. If there's 50 of us and 1,000 of you, where are they? Let's go.
Yeah.
And there's no calculating and rationalizing it. It's just, we're having it. Let's go.
Born, you know, and it's romantic and obviously exaggerated and not completely true and all that. But, and it comes down to technology. But given the equal weapons, given the equal technology, warriors who will just go out there because they can, and they'll fight and fight and fight because they can and they will and they have to, they just keep running. There's a different energy than to people who are going out there because they're paid, or they're frightened to look silly, or they're frightened of the consequences, or if they do this, they'll win. It's almost like the trophy owns them. And it, the world championships are on at the moment in squash. I've talked to some players and it's like, you have to revere, you have to worship the world championships as an idea. You know, they are, we all buy into the story of if you become world champion, what an achievement. And that's brilliant. You know, it's you train and the rituals and you almost worship it, but don't fear it. Don't let it own you. Don't let it own you. And I think Jurgen Klopp has been brilliant with that. He would play a final and he'd go, we really, 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 we worship it. We want to win the championship. We want to win this. But afterwards, he goes out and parties anyway. He's like, it doesn't own me though. I'm gutted we lost, but we got to a final. It's fine. We give everything we could. We worshipped it. We died out there. We run our legs off. We're going to have a good night. And I think there's something in terms of you can't do more than just give it everything. You know what I mean? In a simple ritualistic way. It's not about you guys. It's about the fans. Even if we couldn't pay you this week, would you still play? And I think most of the players will go, yeah, we will. Well, of course we'll play because it's for the people. It's for the game. I can play, so I will play. And obviously in time, you know, they'd want the money in the end. But tapping into that spirit, that kind of mentality, that energy, Ahan is saying we've lost a lot of that because even friendships and even small things are all transactional. They're not genuinely like, I'm coming around to see you just because I can. It's like, I'm coming around to see you because I feel guilty. I haven't been to see you for ages and I just want to get the guilt off my own mind.
I mean, the obvious, just to go back, you know, you're talking about when you were at the college and stuff, and a big thing for Han is it's, remember we did the episode on Merleau-Ponty? I think we did one on embodied perception and stuff, didn't we? Yeah. He's basically saying that, look, it's rituals are an embodied thing as well. So it's people coming together in a place. So like you and a group in a college in an office.
Yeah,
it's people, and it's easy to shit on it, isn't it? Because it just is part of how we are now. But he rails on like the digitalization of communication and what that then means, because ultimately it is disembodied, isn't it? Just WhatsApping someone or email them, even us on like Zoom and stuff, it's not the same. And that's just part of that thing. Like digital, he said, I think he refers to it like digital communication establishes connections, not relationships. And that's going back to you saying about coaching with a player on a court. And it's as much about what you say before and after the session, not just for that hour where you're doing some like a plan, you're working through a session. And yeah, it's like, well, what's going to happen? You're not going to say, well, let's just scrap the internet. Let's just go back to like landline phones and we'll do that again. No one's going to do it.
No.
And he's admitting, it's like, yeah, I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying this is what it's like and what that means. I was thinking actually, like, where, because you do, you read it and you think, like, well, how do I do this in my life? And I know I bang on about it a lot, but the allotment, there's so much ritual on the allotment, and it's exactly what he's saying. It's embodied. You go over there, and like, there's some days I'll go over, and it's like, there's always jobs to do, but there's nothing like, and I just know that there'll be people over there, and you'll just end up having a chat about some random thing. And it's just like, yeah, I'll just nip over there for an hour, see what's going on. And it's ritualized in that it's embodied. Your hands are in the earth, you're doing stuff. There's a lot of set, obviously you work with the seasons and the set jobs to do, the set things that you plant at certain times. And that's quite ritual. It grounds you in that process of doing it. And you're not thinking, right, well, if I plant this and then I do that, then I can do that. You're just like, no, I'm going to do this and then plant that. And you just do it. And part of that he talks about with this, you know, that serial notion of like perception and everything's just one thing, what's after the not. He's like saying people never get closure. And he thinks that's part of these modern mental pathologies of like, you never ever like box something off and do it. And like, I've done that now. And then it's like, you're always in the motion of doing that. So the allotment's great for that as well. I've just like boxed it. Oh, that's grown now. Oh, brilliant. Like I'll think, and it's just ground you in that thing. It gives you closure. And again, he's just saying like the hyper culture at the minute is like, no, we can't have anyone sat still. Like you never just think, all right, I've completed that. I'll rest for a bit. I'll just survey what I've achieved. It's like, no, you've got to be on to the next thing all the time. When you're on about the college as well, obviously I quite like shitting on academia and stuff a bit these days, but a good section on there where he talks about even like education, especially universities, used to be very much a place of ritual.
Yeah.
It wasn't about training and like training you up to get a job and like, we're going to make you more employable. It was a place of ritual. So the classic cap and gown and all those academic rituals of graduation and things like that. It was like the modern universities now, it's a business. So they're like, they'll do those things, but not if it's going to start clashing with like how much work someone's going to get done, how much more we can produce. It's just decorative rituals, isn't it? It's like, yeah, we'll give you the illusion that it's like this really old school, and we all wear these like fancy gowns and stuff and Harry Potter hats and all that stuff. But he's like, it's basically just a chance to take a selfie and revel again in your own achievements. You've graduated. Yes. How great are you? What an achievement. It's all that sort of thing. It's not the genuine ritual of what a lot of that was built on.
It's not holy or humbled or a bit almost religious to the point of get your award, you've got your gown because it wouldn't be something you'd wear.
And by the way, we'll have to charge you for that. We can't, like, you've got to pay for that. Like, so that's another little income thing that we can have on this.
Go off and celebrate it in your own way, because celebrations are very important. It's something he does. It's not all these old doom and gloom. It's like, you know, if you're going to have a birthday, celebrate it. Like in your own way that you find traditional in your tribe, in your family, in your culture, like do it. I think that's good as well. It's like there are cultural things that need to remain. It doesn't want one mass homogenized world community. Every little separate country should have its own identity and rituals going on. So, you know, you live in Iceland or you live in Africa or you live in South America or Middle England or wherever, or Scotland and Wales, you know, use a lot of these, but don't necessarily get nationalistic about it. And it's quite tricky. And you think about people now who are, you know, far right and, you know, and they're like, right, we're Britain and we're this. It's tricky because they take something like a ritual and make it a political thing. Whereas actually, like, there's nothing wrong with the Irish being Irish and the Egyptians being Egyptian and the South Africans being South African and even tribes within that, you know, we don't all have that. That's something else. And I think even within your own families, isn't it nice when you have these little things you do at Christmas and you've always done them and you think, oh my God, we always do this. And you're a bit embarrassed about them to other people. Oh, we always have to have bacon. And then we all, you know, before we don't do it like your family. We do it like our family. And it's nice when you have to join in. And it, like I say, it makes you feel at home. It's what Han's saying. It grounds you. And you can always come back to that. And I think it's, in terms of authenticity, that's probably the closest. He said, don't do authenticity for authenticity's sort of meanness to stand out. Authenticity is where you come from, being humbled and remembering the power of that rootedness of your lineage and history and things that have come, and that it's not always about you. So there is an element of past that's important. And in a way, stop being so future orientated. There's a time to come down and just settle and pay lineage to where you've come from. So rituals do that, and they stop you being itchy for the next thing.
You know, you were saying about rituals becoming political, or you can view them politically. Do you do, like, you know, like Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
And like, probably a big one for you now will be like Father's Day, won't it?
Yeah.
Like having Leo and stuff.
Yes.
It's easy, I think, in a way, to just go, oh, almost the anti-hand thing, but it backfires because you can go, I'm not doing that. Just capitalist bullshit that. Like, why am I going to go and get a card?
Yeah.
For my wife, or why am I going to do it? It's just an excuse to make money. And it is, that's an issue for him, isn't it? He's like, even Christmas, it's basically like capitalism central. Let's buy more shit. Yeah. But there's obviously something there for those things, isn't it? It's a time of like, yeah, like don't necessarily do it when the calendar says it's the 14th of February or whatever. But he's like, no, there's a ritual to appreciating the people that you care about and love and all that, and like showing that.
Yeah.
Like with Christmas, like with Father, and it's like, oh God, it's Mother's Day again. Fuck, I've got to go and get a card now. And like,
yeah,
you can see it quite negatively, can't you? I've definitely done that, where you're just like, oh, I'm not conforming to all your capitalist dates of forcing me to consume stuff. But there is something in there. Like, yeah, maybe what's your ritual's going to be? It must be important to humans somewhere along the line, mustn't it, to have these moments.
Fireworks, what a waste of money.
Yeah.
Never are they? You know, sparklers, why are you having treacle toffee and toffee apples? What are you doing? Pathetic. But these things are building blocks. They're ground. Yeah. They're your memories. They're good for children. You know, they're not just, it's not just some evil capitalist out there. But, you know, now, of course, anything can be exploited and taken to the extreme. So you've got to do it in your own way. You know, you go over to America and they absolutely love Halloween. And he's got to, fine, good for you. The Chinese do it with their year of the frog and all that stuff or whatever. You know, they have theirs. So it's easy to get cynical. And I am so clever, I have bypassed the ritual of having, you know, Christmas cards and all that. You won't catch me out. Do you know how clever I am? But I've seen people go too far that way. And that's that narcissistic thing of, yeah, I'm better than the system, you know, and I'm not just a sheep. I don't fit in because I'm being told what to do. So that's a rise of like narcissism as well. And obviously thinking for yourself is part of it. But there's nothing wrong with going, you know what? It's really important that, you know, I have a bunch of flowers on my anniversary and I make an effort. And funerals, it's important I go to that funeral, even though, like, to be fair, I've a million reasons not to go. But it's a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's celebrate the end of something. Go. So that has come up a lot in all sorts of types of books and things and wisdoms I've read over the years and knowledge things, that essentially it's just a bit of time where it's like, that's more important than me. And that one thing is all through this book, The Disappearance of Rituals, that thing, that community thing, or that thing I do all the time that I don't think is that important when I quickly think about it, but when I really deeply consider it, and if you took them all away, my life would be rudderless. I'd just be empty. I need these pivot points and these set points where I can come home. And that ritual owns me for that amount of time. And you know, when I have to go to other people's and we share it, you actually enjoy it. Now, you don't go, right, I've listened to this podcast now. I'm going to do loads of rituals because it'll make me feel better. Well, that's just narcissism again. Yeah. You know, they don't necessarily make you feel better, or you look forward to them, or you've hijacked them. And everything I ever do ritualistically now is just a mental boost. Everyone get into rituals. That's just another form of utilizing it for your own ends.
Yeah,
it literally is like you, John, it might make you squirm to have to go on a mental, logical level to go and do a ritual with some of your friends. But what it might do for you, you know, in terms of your overall balance, is actually, once I've gone through that a few times, I don't say I look forward to it, but it does even me out, and I can have a little bit of narcissism now, a bit of orange again. And I think golf's good for that. When you go to golf clubs or a sports club, every sport has its own little codes, doesn't it? And things, but golf especially, it's you stand on the tee, be quiet, don't make a noise, you know, your bag, you have to wear certain shoes. And again, it's like the golf course and the golf game of golf is more important than you winning it at this moment in time. Respect it, worship it, and then go and play. So on a really nice golf course or a really nice place you go, it does have a holy aspect to it. There is a bit of reverence. There is a bit of driving up at the course, and it's all neat and tidy. And it's a place that where you don't swear. You don't just go around swearing your head off. You might in the pub, because that's what you do in the pub, but you don't do it at the golf. So all them little things are basically just rituals. And when you break them things and you just shatter them and break them, it's not nice. It's not nice to shatter rituals. And when people are ridicule them for what they're doing. So that's something I've learned through it as well, is to not mock people who do their own little things. Even students who go to university and they just get pissed for 3 years, like, fine, that might be something they have to go through. And they did it properly, instead of just going, what a waste of money. What did you come out with? And so many others came out with.
That's like going to uni. That's he talks about rites of passage, how you used to have way more rites of passage. Certain ages and time, it meant a certain thing, didn't it? But he was like, in the current, because everything's so intense with communication, it's all about production. Again, you lose that sense of time. There aren't those pause moments. It's like, right, I'm this is me now. I'm this age, or this is happening. I was listening to something the other day, or it might have been earlier actually, and I think it was in Norway or somewhere like that. But when you turn 13, you have to go and swim in the sea in March or something daft like that. And obviously there it's freezing cold, and it's a bit of a rite of passage of like you're leaving childhood and you're moving more towards not an adult, but you're becoming more mature. And it's just like those little things, it's very ritual, but it seems crazy, but like all those sorts, they're just getting blown away now, and they're just not significant anymore, but they must serve a purpose in that development. The last little bit from me on that, he talks about play as well. So we mentioned practice earlier and repetition and the importance of the ritual notion of like learning your times table and just like boxing it off over and over again. He says, today to live means merely to produce. We are all workers and no longer players. And he's basically saying, as soon as you subordinate everything to production and being a producer, ritual disappears. And I think that, like, I don't know if he's necessarily meaning be more playful and just like treat life as a game and things, but there must be an aspect of it to that if everything's just about like, well, what am I going to produce? What's this hour chat we're going to have here? What's it going to produce? What am I going to get out of it? Instead of just having the chat in a playful, more like just having the chat for having the chat, going and playing the game of golf for playing the game of golf, not, oh, well, will I get my handicap down or will it mean this and will I win that competition? Playing over producing. I think that's a big mindset shift for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it I remember it was called it strong play versus weak play.
That's it.
And weak play is where what it's like ultimately you're like, well, what does it get me? I'll go and have a doss about, or I'll go and mess around. Oh, that's good because I'm developing my creative abilities, and that's good because I'm. It's always like the gain, and whereas strong players like, no, I'm going out because I can.
Yeah,
no reason to, but I just love it. And that was a little bit like the very first episode, the alpinist. He just climbed mountains because he could, and there was a ritual to it, and he got lost there, and he did it in his own way, and none of the people interviewing him could work him out because he couldn't explain. He was like, yeah, I might die, but this is what I do. And, you know, a lot of people who go out drinking and socialize, you know, they do the little quirky things that you think that's counterproductive. That's not polished. That's not going to pay off in the end. But it's not always about paying off in the end, is it? Sometimes it's just about going out. Yeah, but why? I just went out. Yeah, but that's what Han's saying again. Everything doesn't have to have what's the net gain? The net gain is I can hit five things in one. I can see my friends. I can have a blowout. I can dinner. I can catch up, tick that box, see them, visit them, and I've done it. I gained it. It's like, isn't it? That's why a lot of people think now, isn't it? And
my version of the alpinist is growing onions on the allotment because neither of me and Holly don't eat onions. She went the other day and she's like, why have you planted all those onions? And I was just like, just because I had them, just because I can, see if they grow or not. And then I'll just give them away or like someone will have them. But it's just like, yeah, just because I can. Not grown onions before. I just wanted to see what it was like. There was no point to it other than that. She's like, oh, yeah. Seems a bit, you're using up a bit of space there. You could have put something else in that you would eat.
And that's what you see children when they play and, you know, running, going around on the bike for the first time, messing about, kicking around, laughing, lying on the grass, standing up, carrying on, jacking the game in, starting it up again, throwing grass at each other. Just playing, isn't it? You know, and it is tricky when you're an adult with all the responsibilities and so on. But it's like carve yourself some time. And I actually think there's a big ritual to being with your mates. I think when you're with your group of friends that you know well, which you haven't got many, but a good group of friends, you have established ways of communicating and in jokes, and you have a history and you have a bond and it goes way back and you can't explain it, but it's an atmosphere with that group. That you couldn't even write it down. It's just a way that, and you know when you're stepping out of it and being an idiot, and you know when you're in it and you know, there's boundaries and ways you operate as a group, you know, language, jokes, how far you take, a piss take and all these things and how supportive you are. So I think that's ritualistic, you know, spending time with your actual friends and not for any gain, but just to do it. That's powerful. I think that's something that you have to go, I don't really fancy going out on Friday because I'm gonna do this and all that, but it's actually important that you do for your overall sanity. And also just sometimes you're helping them by just turning up, so it's not about you, you're just being there. You're in their space. Coaching can be like that. You just literally turn up and be there and it's enough because you're there caring and making the effort and you're just there and you rub off and it settles people and it's good. It's not always about the information that you drop.
There we go then. So what we're saying, spend time with your mates. Don't binge watch Netflix. Don't get a tattoo.
Don't laugh at people for their strange ways and what they do.
Go say grace before dinner. Make sure you're doing that.
And read the book. It's good.
Yeah, read the book is a good one. I recommend it, definitely.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space.
between yourself and the world of nature outside you.